Podcasting is a complicated profession, and that's why we're here to talk about The Bad Batch, currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined for this series of episodes by my good friend and Star Wars pal, Tony Sindelar. Hi, Tony.
It's me. Hello, nerds. Hello, specifically, Nerd Dan.
Oh, goodness. I appreciate the specific greetings. That
well, you're here.
Makes me feel seen.
Mm-hmm.
We continue our sojourn through the latest animated Star Wars series with episode 5 entitled Rampage. So we'll talk about the episode a little bit and, we'll run through the recap and then we'll, have some discussion of where things are going. Because I think we decided this is running, 14 episodes or something? It's somewhere in the teens.
I thought it was 16, but I don't know how you count the first episode that was the length of 3 episodes. So, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not
sure.
Does that count as one or count as 3?
I think it counts as one, but I'm also, it says 16 episodes, and yeah, so we're...
Star Wars The Bad Batch premiered on May 4th, 2021, and will consist of 16 episodes, right. Says Wikipedia.
So we'll assume we're roughly a third of the way through the first season.
All right, sure.
Alright, so, Rampage. We open with the Bad Batch on their shuttle, headed to Ord Mantell to find out why the bounty hunter they encountered last week is after Omega. Echo knows of an informant there named Sid, who used to supply the Jedi with information. Omega's got her comm unit, which is Crosshair's repurposed comm unit, and there are some... yeah. It doesn't fit quite right, apparently, but it works, and there are some good gags with Omega constantly using the comm unit, even though they have told her it's not a toy.
Mm.
So they land on Ord Mantell, a planet that I don't think we have ever actually seen in a Star Wars visual capacity, although it has been mentioned most notably in The Empire Strikes Back as a place where they Han and Princess Leia and some others encountered a bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
So on the planet, Omega now has rules laid down. I trust no one but my squad. This occurred to me at one point, are they going to have to change their armor at some point? Is it too, I guess it doesn't look exactly like standard clone armor, but they all look like clone troopers still a little bit. I wondered if that was going to be an issue at some point, but so far, not so much. They reach a bar where they ask after Sid, but are told by someone who works there that they're in the wrong place. And as they argue about it, Omega basically intuits that the, I think it's a Trandoshan, who that they have addressed is actually Sid. Sid has run into business problems without the Jedi to supply information to, and so she is basically willing to identify the bounty hunter in exchange for the Bad Batch doing a job for her. As mercenaries. Mercenary, says one of them, and you get the feeling maybe this is where we're headed. Maybe they've become mercenaries. There's a nice little bit here also I noted only on my rewatch where Omega and Wrecker do a high five. Not quite a high five, but it's a low five, but they slap hands at one point, which is cute. They're looking for a kid named Muchi who has been captured by slavers. And so they set out to take this job. Back on the ship, Wrecker still has a headache. Foreshadowing continues. And they teach Omega about slave trading, which she is unaware of. They run recon at the camp. There's a reference to them doing a job on Kuat, which is the home to the Kuat drive yards. There's a deep cut for you. Omega is sent back to the ship while the Bad Batch carry out their missions. They have starts as a solid plan, but they don't account for the lead Zygarian's dragon, who basically knocks them all out and they get caught in a net. We have a brief interlude where Sid is talking to whoever has employed her and assures them that her best people are on the job. Back in the ship, Omega has converted her trooper doll that she acquired last week into a Bad Batcher, which is kind of adorable. The Zygarians have found the ship. We also learned the power droid's name is Gonki, which I absolutely love.
Omega, I wasn't sure if that was just Omega's name for it. Is that Bad Batch authorized? I don't know.
I'll allow it.
Yeah, all right.
I'll allow it.
She's the only one there, so...
Yeah, who else is... the other ones don't seem to even bother getting the power droid a name, so, it's gonna stick. Omega escapes the ship while the Zygarians are searching it, but she cannot raise the squad on comms because they've been captured and they're chained up with these shock collars. They are talking to what they believe to be Muchi, a pair of Feline. Wow, there's another another deeper cut for you. But all their gear has been taken away, so they cannot contact Omega. Fortunately, Omega has shown up. She sneaks around, and it, like, Hunter basically tells her, like, sort of nods at her to keep out of trouble. Echo loudly mentions that they need their gear, which she goes after. The lead Zygarian threatens to feed Wrecker to his pet. Omega lands atop the cage and then goes to unlock it and gets caught, at which point she says she wasn't sneaking around, she was unlocking, and a Rancor has joined the fight. The Bad Batch use this distraction to escape. They go to rescue the kid and are told that is not Muchi, the Rancor is Muchi, so the Bad Batch has to go after her. Echo and Omega free the rest of the slaves. Hunter fights the Leave Slater, and Omega picks up an energy bow at some point. Spent a lot of time in that shop for some reason. It's unclear to me. Tech points out the only way for them to beat the Rancor is that Wrecker has to challenge the Alpha. So they tiredly slug each other until Muchi falls asleep.
Yeah, they just have a slap fight.
And then back on Ord Mantell, Sid's client, Bib Fortuna, has appeared. And is demanding the return of Muchi, who the Bad Batch appears with Omega riding. Sid gets paid up and then summons Hunter to her office, where she identifies Fennec Shand, who is new to the bounty hunting scene but has apparently made quite the impression, although she does not know who hired Shand. She was a direct commission. She tells Hunter he'll need friends and money, and there are more jobs where that came from, and also promises to keep their secrets, since they are being hunted by Fennec Shand. And that is the that's the episode.
That's kind of, yeah,
it's pretty, it's a pretty tight episode, I will say, for the most part. It does not feel like, not that the previous ones were super meandering, but there's not a lot of dead time in this one.
No, I like this one. It's fun. It moves quickly. This, I could see this one being controversial with people, because this one is full of basically Star Wars deep canon lore, deep cuts, and of course I think something that I don't know, it amused me in this one, but in other Star Wars contexts irks me, which is there's only like 8 places in Star Wars and every character is just a character you're gonna see later. Set of course in this one there is but what one Rancor. It's just where do you experience him, it on the timeline.
I was so sad for the Rancor, because as I was like thinking about it, first of all, I had a lot of questions. Why were the slavers taking slaves and capturing Rancors? I mean, that seems kind of random. I'm just unclear as to how they captured the Rancor. Did she already belong to Jabba? They saved this Rancor from a life of slavery only to imprison it in a pit where it eats people.
I don't think they're rescuing it from a life of slavery. I think they are rescuing it from these people to then be. Yeah, there's a lot that this episode glosses over, and you have to kind of be like, does it matter? I mean, there's the whole, they don't mention what the target looks like. They just give it a name. Yes. Not the most useful thing to recover a Rancor with. I mean, unless Rancor does not seem to respond by name. I don't know if we missed it, if there was like, here's the tracking fob that, you know, the Rancor has a DNA that it's been coded to. Yeah, the Rancor has a keychain, chain code.
She does give Hunter a thing that has like the data about the bounty.
Okay.
On it. But
and he doesn't read it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It is not specified. But yeah, it is it's bad hiring practices there.
Yeah. So let's go through it kind of bit by bit, because there's a bunch of dumb stuff here or silly things that may amuse some of you or interest others of you and frustrate yet others of you. So first off, this is the first time I believe that we canonically see Ord Mantell, and this is a classic Dave Filoni or Dave Filoni's team loving to canonize things that have been kicking around the extended universe for forever. I will tell you that Ord Mantell, it's mentioned in a line in Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
It is The one of the very early, I guess even before we had the term expanded universe, there was a Star Wars, I think it was originally a comic strip published in the newspaper.
Yeah,
and then
the
recollected.
Archie Goodwin one. Yeah.
Yeah. So Ord Mantell is the setting for, I mean, it's like they took that line and it's like, okay, let's do the backstory. And that was published like in the 80s. I guess yep. after Empire Strikes Back would have come out. But yeah, it's, you know, Han and this weird half cyborg alien bounty hunter who wants to turn him over to Boba Fett to then turn him over. A lot of subcontracting in the bounty hunting world. And I read those comics, I think not as they were originally presented, but as they were like collected in a Dark Horse Comics collection. They weren't great. And yeah, of course they're right. not like they've all been thrown out now as not canon. But yeah, Ord Mantell gets mentioned a lot in a lot of extended universe stuff and then was thrown out with when all the extended universe was thrown out. So here it is. Here's Dave Filoni being like, no, I like that bit. That bit's back. And establishing that Ord Mantell is kind of a, I don't know, it's one of your mid-range worlds. I mean, there's a lot of people on it. It's got actual cities, but it's pretty sketchy. You know, it's not Nar Shada, but it's...
It seems to be a planet that's populated not necessarily by, like, a native race, but by a hodgepodge of aliens from across the galaxy.
It's one of these melting pot planets, which I think are the more interesting parts of Star Wars. It's not Tatooine, where there's only, like, 8 Jawas. It's, like, actual cities, weird, sketchy stuff. So, yeah, we get that. Let's see. What else? So we get Ord Mantell. We get Sid, who is a Trandoshan, who I think is the first female coded Trandoshan that we've seen. There's Trandoshans, if you've only seen the core movies, Bossk, the bounty hunter, he's lizard. He's tall, wears a yellow, very yellow, bright yellow jumpsuit on the bridge of that Star Destroyer when Vader is talking to the bounty hunters, reminding them no disintegrations. I think he literally has no line of dialogue. I think he growls and his little feet are like peeking over a deck at an Imperial officer.
We should note that Sid is voiced by Rhea Perlman, who is of course famous for playing Carla on Cheers.
You love Cheers. You cover Cheers on your other podcast.
That's right. We spend a lot of time on Cheers. I actually think she's great here, and Sid is a fun character who is like, I feel like, you know, the sort of the rogues and scoundrels category of Star Wars is obviously a big group of characters. You get, you know, everybody from Lando in the original trilogy. You get Hondo and Naka in Clone Wars and Rebels. I feel like Sid falls into sort of a similar category where it's like, is she trustworthy? Is she not trustworthy? It's unclear, but she is... like she provides a convenient service and something that they need, so they kind of have to trust her. And so I'm envisioning, I don't know if this is true, and she may not come back next week, but it seems like this now also gives them a lifeline into what we talked about in previous episodes, which is how are they going to get by with no longer without a support system? And now they have a contact who's willing to, you know, assign them jobs, basically.
Yeah, she seems like a very important quest giver outer.
There's a question mark over her head.
Yes. And, you know, she's a fun personality. Most of the other Trandoshans we see in Clone Wars and Rebels are, I guess they're primarily kind of male-coded Trandoshans, and they are very, like, the big thing in Trandoshan culture that we know about them is they're, like, obsessed with hunting things for sport. Especially Wookiees, but basically they're very into, they have no qualms about hunting sentient creatures, and, there's an arc in Clone Wars where they even basically, I think they capture Ahsoka as a apprentice Jedi. Because, they're into hunting things for sport. And that kind of like, not quite in a Klingon honor kind of way. Like, more like, oh, yeah, we're going to kidnap people and put them in the woods. And then we're going to hunt them down with technology and sniper rifles. And so it's like weird as there's kind of an honor thing, but also like... you know, we're not going to give you a gun. We are the ones with guns. You run around in the woods and we will shoot you.
I like the addition of Sid here because I feel like it fleshes out that and gets beyond like sort of the Klingon problem, which I feel like I've talked about a bunch of places about like you can't have a society that's all one thing.
Yes.
It doesn't work. And so having someone here, and there's a tip to the hat here too, which I like, in that both Sid's office has in it both on the wall a clone helmet and a Mandalorian helmet, I noticed on the second watch.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, it's on the other side. Good. And I was like, okay, so it's kind of like she's got trophies, sort of, right?
Yes.
Like, and she's got a horn on the desk. So
she's got, she is
there's
a
an element to that.
of yes, which I like. I mean, there's, I think, you know, to take it back to Klingons, it's like, does your culture have scientists? And it's like, there's got to be Klingon scientists. They're just not represented, like, in the political structure, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. Exactly. Dan, what is...
Or lawyers. There's lawyers and accountants.
I was going to say, like, what is the equivalent in America? I mean, is our civilization, if you looked at it from an as an outside observer, would you just say, like, oh, there's civilization is mainly based around lawyers.
I was going to say...
control their political...
Well, it depends if you're watching TV, in which case you say it's based around lawyers, law enforcement, and doctors. Basically, that's what it is.
And sports.
Right. There you go.
Where are the podcasters running civilization?
Yeah, there's not nearly enough podcast representation in popular media.
Anyway, let's tune into this next week's Trandoshan podcast episode. So I enjoy Sid as a, you know, breaking that mold, who seems to be, I can't tell, good at her job or not, in the subcontracting for the Hutts, which seems to be, I mean, she took 70% of a big suitcase full of money for not really doing anything and sending them on a mission that she did not necessarily think they would even be successful at, and giving them pretty incomplete information. On the other hand, it did really remind me of like a Dungeons & Dragons setup where it's like, you guys should ask more questions.
Right.
It's like, no, there's
no
time.
New here. This is, they haven't done this before.
Yeah, they're used to getting kind of Republic briefings that are very specific and play to their strengths. So we get to teach Omega about the horrible world of slavery in the Star Wars universe. So, there's that.
Check. Sorry, maybe you don't want to go to places other than Kamino because it's terrible out here.
I was surprised they didn't make any comparisons to, like, I mean, the clones are not identified as slaves, but they're like, how far away is slavery from what they, I mean, they don't have lives of their own. They can't just leave. They're conscripted. Like,
right. They're deserters. There's a question of indentured servitude at the very least there.
I mean, I don't think they get paid for their work, so...
I don't think so either.
Yeah. What else? They're dealing with the slavers. The slavers are Zygarians, who are cat people. Did the head slaver even have a name? He just had a weird space Eastern European accent villain voice. We see Zygarians
in kind of a uniform thing.
Yeah. He had two different color eyes. I couldn't tell if that was a natural or injury-resulted thing. Zygarians appear in Star Wars Clone Wars. Surprise, surprise, they are on the bad side. They're with the Trade Federation. I don't really remember anything about them except that they are extremely pro-slavery and, like, their entire economy is based on slavery. I think Obi-Wan gets captured.
Tough position to stake out there.
Yeah, I think Obi-Wan gets captured and treated as a slave for, like, an episode before he breaks out. They do that space dragon Brezik thing appears in that episode with them, so that was a reoccurring thing. They really failed to scout for dragons again.
Check
for dragons.
I like that they're almost competent in that moment, right? Like, they're, like, setting out like it's a traditional military operation, and there's a couple bits in there that I think are good where it's like they ask Tech to estimate their chances of success, and he's like, well,
I have no information to base this on.
We've never done this before, basically, right? Like, this is not a military operation. We don't have anything to compare this to. And I think it's nice because it shows their shortcomings outside of their comfort area, right? Like, when they are detached from the things that they are used to doing and their sort of zone of comfort, they are still competent, but they are not quite as smooth, I think, as they were in other contexts.
Yes, they get... I think people who get annoyed about continuity would be like, they get captured very, very easily for theoretically expert special forces. They get captured by like three goons with a net real fast. I don't know. I mean, that sometimes that happens for plot purposes in an episode, is people get the drop on you and then you have to be rescued by other people, which it seemed like the episode required. So we get a Rancor. I don't know how many canonical appearances of a Rancor there are outside of Return of the Jedi, and I guess this is the exact same Rancor as it's revealed later, but this in adolescent form, since we're still 20-odd years before Return of the Jedi. I like the way the Rancor moved. I thought that was really neat. Like the way it's like much more, well, I don't know, it's out in the open, so much more agile than the version, the elder Rancor we see in the pit in Return of the Jedi. And I like it has this kind of ape-like movement where it is kind of propelling itself with its upper body and has those big shoulders. And then they don't have to kill it, since obviously they can't kill it for timeline reasons. But that just Wrecker kind of just, they both kind of slap each other into exhaustion. I thought that was fun.
I enjoy that conflict. It is funny, and it just sort of, I mean, Wrecker, I think, has quickly evolved into the fun comic relief character for the most part, and that's fine. I enjoy that. You need someone to lighten the mood a little bit, and I think the thing that I have most appreciated about this so far is that he is the one who has clearly bonded with Omega over their, they kind of are on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
And it's because Wrecker's a little bit childlike. I mean, he has, like, that aspect to his personality, and so, you know, you have him like making the room for her, and like you know, I think she shows him the doll at one point this week in the background, and like little things like that, whereas, you know, Hunter and Echo, I feel like, have mostly taken on sort of like the responsibility, like parental responsibility angle, and then Tech is just like, I cannot be bothered with this small person.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't think I'm annoyed by the appearance of Mucci. I mean, there's not an origin story to the Rancor so much as like, this is a thing that happened in its life, is at some point it was captured by Zygurians, and then I guess unclear if it's being, I don't, are we, do we even know, is it being sold to Jabba the Hutt or return to Jabba the Hutt? Like, is that,
it is unclear. But it's clear that like Bib Fortuna seems to know, like, feel strongly and like emotionally have an attachment to,
like,
her,
they want this Rancor, they don't just need a Rancor,
right.
So yeah,
and so the question is, how did it get captured? Was it on the way to Jabba's palace? Was it like something taken out of their procession? Why did the slavers,
well, maybe they didn't used to keep it in a pit under the throne room, maybe it was, and now that's like, nope, that's a protective safety thing.
Exactly.
But I mean,
if you're gonna get Rancor stolen, then you want to keep it secure.
But this is not like an origin story for the Rancor so much as just the Rancor is here.
I think it would have been funny. I know people get annoyed with all the Easter eggs, but I would think it would have been funny to see the Rancor trainer who we see in Return of the Jedi show up.
Zero years old. So
well, it's unclear.
Maybe his father, that you see wearing.
Rancor trainer, senior.
Well, he's wearing that loincloth gets handed down.
Risky.
He looks kind of like a barbarian, if I remember correctly.
He's got like a headdress.
Kind of a bare chest belly thing going on.
But he is sad when the Rancor dies.
Yes, he is very sad.
There's some emotional there.
I recall there being an action figure of him, which I thought seemed unnecessary.
There was,
except that they make an action figure. There was an action figure
of everyone, Tony.
Yes. So, checking in on our no Kaminos and no Crosshair in this episode. So that's two episodes without any sight of them. Though it does seem like
They're playing out the whole, like, who could have possibly hired Fennec Shand thing. And as we discussed,
it's like, is there only one person?
I think there's, I'm down to three. I expanded to three, although they're all kind of different factions of the same,
so,
right?
Like, Imperials, Kaminoans
seem the most likely.
Yeah.
And then I'll throw in the middle just as a wild card, is if it's like directly from Crosshair, like, because Crosshair is trying to track down.
But the order came from the planet. It's got a return address of Kamino.
Yeah, of Kamino. Yeah, it's not like there's some random person somewhere who's like, oh, that kid.
Damn,
I
want
to find that kid.
What if it's Yoda? Yoda wants Omega dead. Omega knows what she did.
Well, we have another bit this week in sort of our two of our ongoing foreshadowing things. We had mentioned Wrecker's headache, which we seems destined to head for something related to the inhibition chips.
Yep.
And then we also had Omega intuiting that Cid was who she was.
Yeah.
Which I think, again, sort of potentially...
Real slow walk in those.
Well, you got 16 episodes. I mean, we're only...
I know, but still, the Omega's power, I felt like, you know, in other media, they would have given us that by the end of episode one as a
right,
thing.
Right.
You know, I'm just thinking of The Mandalorian, where how long are we with the child before the child does some Force stuff.
Yeah. I think It's interesting. I mean, I don't know exactly where we're going with that still, and it seems definitely like we're in that early series of episodes where we're building up a framework around these characters and introducing side characters and sort of laying out plot threads and stuff like that. One thing that's come up a lot in this show, and I know some people are critical of it, is sort of the variances in tone in terms of stuff that deals with, like, feels like, is this targeted at kids or is it not targeted at kids? And I don't know that I have a good answer on that. I feel like even Clone Wars struggled with that at times.
Yeah.
And like within, like, not as much within arcs necessarily, but like you would have arcs that seemed very child focused.
Let us deal with the nature of war. Also, Jar Jar Binks is late for a Senate meeting.
But I mean, on the same, and by the same token, I do think that's true of a lot of the Star Wars franchise. And some of it is also that I think as adults, we are more sensitive to what we are depicting to children than children are consuming it sometimes. Like, I'm thinking about all the stuff I consumed as a kid that was, you know, probably more serious and or violent than probably I should have been consuming, even for stuff that was aimed at kids, right? And so I think a lot of those cases, you had shows that had very, like, kid-aimed, kid-friendly things that occasionally snuck in more, like, adult themes or were, you know, aimed at kids who were, like, in the middle, like, you know, the sort of now tween, early teen ranges and stuff like that, whereas Omega is, like, pitched as a very young kid. And so I wondered, part of me wondered if she had been a few years older whether this dynamic would have been different. And I think I would not be surprised, depending on the plan for this show, to see having to deal with her aging up at some point, like, and so what we're seeing again is groundwork laid for this character who potentially, you know, grows up in this life with all these, like, former clones, and, like, what does that turn her into? Who does she become? And so we're still sort of in early days for that. So I could see, given the amount of time we have between sort of here and the rest of the fleshed out continuity, there is chance for her to mature and become a, like, you know, if not an adult, then a teenager who is, you know, still with these mercenaries potentially.
Yeah.
And, like, has become one of them, right? Like, we see her pick up a weapon this week.
Yeah.
And that, as I mentioned,
the long lingering shot on
there's a lingering shot on that. And I don't think we've seen the payoff of it yet. Mm-mm. But I think the suggestion is we've already started to train her to, like, you know, be safe. The next step is to train her to be, like, you know, able to protect herself and essentially become more of a full-fledged member of the team. I think
it is always, I mean, I think Dave Filoni has shown that he is interested in showing his characters that he's created at very different places in their life throughout the complicated Star Wars universe. Ahsoka being the big one, who we see basically from child to middle age in little snapshots here and there through Clone Wars, and then 15 years later in Rebels, and then, I don't know, 15 years later in The Mandalorian. And, you know, sometimes I think about these characters, it's like, well, at some, aren't they just all going to die, or do they wander off and become not important? It's like, no, the Star Wars galaxy is pretty big and pretty sprawling and pretty important. And I think Rogue One always kind of, like, implanted on me, it's like, oh, if this person seems really great, they're gonna die because they're not part of the bigger picture. But, you know, sometimes you get to retire, or you're in the background. But yeah, you know, I mean, Omega may not be operating under the name Omega by the time of the original trilogy, right? So just because we've never heard of an Omega before doesn't mean that she's not running around, living a life, or I don't know, or retired.
Riding Rancors.
You know, maintaining moisture vaporators on Tatooine. You know, the good life.
It's the place to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what everybody wants, is they want a house on Tatooine on the Dune Sea.
I don't, you
know,
I don't under-
really.
Well, also, what, you went there to mine water? That seems like a, you know.
Yeah. Why don't you go to a planet that actually has water and then send it to Tatooine? I don't know. Why do I have to do everything for these people?
Just seems like a poor choice. Homesteading.
I had a couple of production notes on this one. Again, the animation continues to impress.
Yeah.
It does vary into the cartoony. I think Mucci is a little bit cartoony, but as you said, I love the animation style for mm-hmm. her. I think it works really well. I like the shots on Ord Mantell, and I know some of our friends have said, like, well, they keep stuff some dark in the background so they don't have to animate everything, but I still there's a lot of stuff in the day, and also I just like the lighting and stuff in Ord Mantell. Yeah. There's a lot of detail. Mm-hmm. And I was actually in a bar the other night, inside a bar for one of the first times.
You're marveling at the lighting effects in reality, Dan?
The lighting effects in real life. They're so realistic. No, it was they had a Star Wars themed drink menu, and they're having their Star Wars month, and so they had a bunch of like the toys on the shelves and stand ups and everything like that. But in the background, they were playing Clone Wars episodes on a projector, and I was like glancing up and being like early Clone Wars animation. You're like, oh, they've come a long way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think just affordable CGI tech has come a long, long way because they looked real flat and kind of. I mean, it's hard to compare. TV animation quality CGI is not has aged. So
right, I mean, and it's, you know, like a decade or more later. Too,
I think even the first couple episodes. I think there's like a jump after 5 episodes where it's like either they improve their tech processor or spending more money or something where it gets better. Because there's parts of it where it just everything looks.
There's
really
a couple
flat
points where it jumps up.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
So
yeah. And then there was an audio processing thing I noticed. I don't know if anybody else picked this up. It felt like there were a couple points where they very aggressively stereo panned this. Like
I don't think my setup would even make that visible.
Having two speakers, mm-hmm. you know, like two stereo speakers set up, there's like a couple of the early scenes where they're talking to Sid where like Tech is on the right and Hunter's on the left. And I was like, you know, Tech mm-hmm. says something. I'm like, wow, that is like, you are like really pumping the right channel there. And then it goes back to the left. And you're like, so like, okay, I get it. They're standing in a row and you're doing stereo panning. That's fine. But it was like, it was aggressive enough that I noticed it both times that I watched it, like that there were a couple scenes where it's like they had just cranked it a little more than I was used to. So maybe that's just my ears on this one, but it jumped out at me. Yeah, other than that, I think this is interesting. We've spent several episodes now away from Kamino and Crosshair and stuff like that, which kind of makes me feel like we're bound to have him pop up in the next week or two just as a reminder that he's still there. But I don't know. I don't we're still, like I said earlier, we're still like in those first few episodes we're establishing the groundwork and like trying to figure out like how they operate in this world that they live in. So more episodes, probably a few more episodes of that.
Well, I like this one, I think, and I like the last one. So Rampage and Cornered have landed a lot better for me than with we had before that Replacements and Cut and Run. And the Replacements and Cut and Run, I think, were a little they needed a little bit more polish. I feel like these two have been I could see why people might not love them, but I think these have been solid and the type of Star Wars I am looking for in my Star Wars. So
yeah, no, I enjoyed them as well. I liked some of the Imperial stuff from Replacement, but I think that the main plot and that was fairly forgettable. And I would like to see a little bit more. We keep getting hints of how like the Empire is changing everything and, you know, it being happening quickly. And I like that aspect of it, seeing the sort of transition from Republic to Empire. And it's discussed again this week a few times about like, you know, they talk about the Republic had outlawed slavery to the Zygarians, and they're like, yeah, guess what? The Republic's gone. It's the Empire now. And Sid talks about her business drying up, and there's no Jedi left for her to, like, you know, inform to.
And just,
so, you know,
is the Empire,
that's happening. But
the Empire's kind of okay with slavery, as far as we know, or at least Wookiee slavery.
Sure seems like it.
Or I don't know what word they're calling them. Maybe they're just prisoners of war or something, but it is established. There are other places where there's just people doing slave labor for the Imperials, right? In a way that the Republic theoretically never.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Did you want to say anything about what was that last set of aliens that was mentioned? The ones who are also part of the Black Sun were
Feline.
Yeah.
Prince Shizor from Shadows of the Empire is a Feline, and they have appeared in other.
I think we've only ever seen them as members of Crime Syndicate, but these are
Black
apparently.
Sun. Yeah.
Look, they can be victims too.
Right. We talked about Dave Filoni and his love of things in Star Wars canon, so it's always, you know, there's. if there's an opportunity to put in something that's a reference, I generally feel like
yes, he'll do it.
he's not letting stuff lie fallow in the background and be like, I don't know, just make that some other random thing that we've never seen before. Yeah. No, it's just generally going to be something.
It's this weird thing where they threw out all of the extended universe and then they put somebody in charge who's like, bring it back. And, you know, I mean, I guess it's like the stories have been thrown out, but the ingredients are still being reinserted.
Sure,
piece by piece.
Because there's no reason you can't do that, right? Like, there's no reason you can't. Like, I think he takes very much the viewpoint of like, well, you know, just because we threw that out doesn't mean those things don't exist. Yes. We just haven't seen them, right? And so that's why you get characters like Thrawn reappearing, or you get the Feline or whatever.
It is an interesting view where he is both he is kind of the creator in the world of Star Wars now, or at least head of the creation, but he's also a big Star Wars fan. So you could imagine somebody else wanting to whole cloth create new stuff left and right that was theirs. And no, Dave Filoni is like, no, I want to bring, I've got Feline toys in my drawer. I want to play with those. So I enjoy that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a curatorial aspect, yes. I think, which is interesting. And it's like very much like, I like this and we can use this and we can like remix those in kind of a different way.
And maybe that was silly, but that's fine. Or we'll make a joke about that. But yes. He is not interested in creating he is creating new stories with the with his old action figures, but he does not need to make his own new action figures left and right, which I think that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, that is Rampage, which I think we both like, and we're interested in seeing what comes next, which of course we'll be back to talk about next week. But until then, I'd like to thank my co-host, Tony Sindelar. Thanks for being here.
Goodbye, nerds.
And thank you, everybody out there, for listening to the show. We hope you're enjoying the Bad Batch and following along. As a reminder, of course, if you care to support the show directly, you can do that by going to theincomparable.com/members, signing up to become a member, and choosing to support A Complicated Profession. We really appreciate it. As I said, we'll be back next week to talk about episode 6 of the Bad Batch. But until then, may the Force be with you.